So you take time and stands to be done by the body. Say I'm above the name of the death yourself and to come. I'm supposed to this child from the sin of any good soul. Petit the name of any good voice in everything. And we're reading in the 7th chapter, and we've just heard of those devotees who surrendered to Krishna, and before that, those who don't surrender to Krishna. How do you do on your exam, by the way? Yes? First in class? Did you get the results yet? How do you know it's not first in class? Unlikely. Okay. But in any case, Krishna explained that of those who come to him, the jnanis who aren't yet pure, those who desire wealth, those who desire to be free from distress, those who are curious, and the jnanis who desire nothing in the material world but desire to be free from material existence, they come to him. And they are great souls, they are sukritinos. And the best of those is the jnanis. Krishna explains how dear they are to him. But those, he explains, but those who are ritta-jnana, who don't have any knowledge, instead of worshipping him to get even material results, they worship the demigods. And they follow the rules and regulations to get what they want from the demigods. And Krishna is saying that it is far better, even if you have material desires, to go to me to have your desires realized. And he also says this in the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Vakarma sarva karma va moksha karma udaradi tirena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. Because if you go to Krishna, to satisfy material desires, you'll get those. But one will see them in their perspective as not actually worth very much. And in other words, one's hearts get purified. So those who go to the demigods to gain their material desires, they're called ritta-jnana. They don't have any knowledge. And also, Krishna says that if they have faith in a demigod, then it is me who is giving them that faith and making it steady. And it is me, actually, Krishna said, who bestows the benefits that the demigods give. It is me who does that. Like the postman may deliver a letter, but it's coming from something greater and larger than him. So the demigods are just deliverers of the benefits. But they're all ultimately coming from Krishna anyway. So Krishna's giving transcendental knowledge to show his position, his supreme position, because if one has this knowledge, one's strength of faith and one's strength of devotion increases and becomes very firm. So then, in the last verse I think we read last time, he said, antavatu falam tesham tat bhavat yaupamedasham. Those who worship the demigods, devan devo yajo yanti mad bhakti yanti mamapi. That people who are upamedasham. What does alpa mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Say, if you're in Bengal and they're serving you prasadam and they want to give you this much what?
Rice.
And you can't eat that much. So you say, alpa, alpa. Little, little. In Hindi, what do you say? So alpa, medasam. Medasam means intelligence. So tora, tora, intelligence. Those who worship the demigods, they have just an alpa medasam, a little bit of intelligence. So that's what Krishna says. Why? because men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Say if one worships Krishna to gain something on the material level, but ultimately because he's been worshiping Krishna, he will get his material temporary item, but he will also get eternal benefit. But if one worships the demigods to get one's material desires satisfied, then one only gets the temporary. So the benefit is only temporary. So those who worship the demigods, Krishna says, goes to the planet of the demigods. But my devotees ultimately reach my planet. So if one becomes a devotee of Krishna, even if he has material desires, even if he's just curious, or even if he wants to remove his distress, or he wants liberation, ultimately he will come to Krishna's abode because he's a devotee. What to speak of if one is a pure devotee and doesn't have those material things, which is the recommendation, then the result of that is prema, is bhakti. The results of pure devotional service are the abhideya, or the means to worship Krishna, that brings the result of prema is pure devotional service, jnana, karma, anavrita. So then Krishna, so he's described the demigod worshippers. And what word did he use to describe them? What, Sanskrit? Anyone remember? This is your exam. How do you say little?
Alpameda.
Yes, but you have the book. That makes it a little easier. Alpamedasam. Now he's going to describe not the demigod worshippers, but the impersonalists. And this is the words he uses. Avyaktam vyaktim aparam manyate mam abhudaya param bhavam ajananto mamam vyayam anutamam. Avyaktam vyaktam aparam manyate mam. Those who think that ultimately unmanifested avyakta, and that I've just adopted this form and personality, in other words, who thinks like that? That God is, the Supreme is impersonal, and then sometimes he comes as an avatar, and he temporarily assumes a personality. The Mayavadis. And actually the Mayavad philosophy is that even the personality that he assumes is a product of the mode of goodness. And so when you're dealing, when Ishvara or the Lord, when the impersonal Brahman, when he comes to this world, he is contaminated basically by the mode of goodness, and he is known as Ishvara. And therefore, when you're worshipping the Ishvara, or the Lord's avatar form, this isn't our philosophy, this is the Mayavad philosophy, then you're worshipping the modes of material nature, and devotional service to that Ishvara, or Krishna, or Narayan, is also in the modes of material nature. Now, our philosophy is completely different. So what does Krishna say about these people who say avyaktam vyaktim apanam? He says manyate, those who think like that about me, mam, they are abhudaya. So Prabhupada translates that as less intelligent. So we heard the demi buddhaya means intelligence, Buddha is intelligence. And you can also translate abhudaya to mean no intelligence, the opposite of intelligence. There's no intelligence, abhudaya. So the worshippers of the demigods are called alpamedasam, which means what? Little intelligence. And those who worship, who think this way about, and are impersonalists and Mayavadis, they have no intelligence. So which is worse, to have a little bit of money or no money? What do you think? Huh? Yes, much worse. So which is worse, to have a little bit of intelligence or no intelligence? So that's what Krishna himself, he calls them abhudaya. Param bhavam ajananto. They don't know param bhavam. They don't know my supreme position. Mama vyayam anutamam. They don't know that I am imperishable, and the finest, the topmost. So if he's imperishable, and Krishna using the term me, mama, myself, and they think that I am impersonal, vyaktam vyaktam, that I was impersonal before, now I've assumed this personality. So that does that mean perishable or imperishable? If you assume a personality and that's not really you, does that mean that your form is temporary, imperishable?
Yeah.
Yes. So Krishna says, ajananto param bhavam. They don't know my supreme nature. They don't know ajananto, and they don't know that my position is imperishable and the most fine, the uttama, the topmost spiritual, because they think that finer than spiritual form is no form. Do you think like that? No. So spiritual form is the topmost. So here's Prabhupada's translation. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, the Buddha, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport, just starting a few sentences. Lord Krishna, in his personal form, is here speaking before Arjuna. And still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. He's saying, I am like this, I am like this. And they say, what he really means is not that he's like that, but that he doesn't have a form. But that's not at all what he says. But what he says is very clear. And the rule of interpretation of text is that if the direct meaning is clear, you don't have to make an indirect interpretation. Just like if you say the city of Perth is on the Swan River, if that's something that you could say. But it's not, obviously, it's not right on the Swan River, right? So the direct interpretation cannot be true. So therefore, you can interpret the word on to mean near, or next to, or on the Swan River. So even though we say Perth is on the Swan River, we mean it's next to the Swan River. So, but if we say Krishna is eternal, his form is eternal, like he's saying about himself, there's no need of an indirect translation, what he really means, because the direct is clear. That's in the rules of interpretation. You only take up the secondary meaning if the primary meaning isn't acceptable. That's going to be on your exam, by the way. So you should study this point.
Today.
Huh?
Today.
Huh?
Today, I guess.
No, I said that's going to be on your Bhagavad Gita exam. They didn't tell you that we're going to have an exam at the end? They didn't? Are you in anxiety now?
No.
Good. So, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Even though he's speaking, there he is, saying, I'm like this and I'm like this. He's standing right in front of Arjuna, or sitting right in front of Arjuna. And still they say what he's saying has an indirect meaning, another meaning, which negates the primary meaning. Yamunacharya, a great devotee of the Lord and the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya, has written a very appropriate verse in this connection. I won't read the Sanskrit, but here's the English. My dear Lord, Devotees like Vyasadeva and Narada know you to be the personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form and your activities, and no one can thus understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how does one understand by studying the Vedic literatures? But those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. They are unable to understand you. However expert such non-devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the personality of Godhead, because they don't have any devotion. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the personality of Godhead cannot be understood simply by study of the Vedanta literature. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated that not only the worshippers of the demigods less intelligent, but those non-devotees who are engaged in Vedanta and speculation on Vedic literatures without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness, they are also less intelligent. And for them, it is not possible to understand God's personal feature. Persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abhudaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. They don't know. So why do people tend to think that the Supreme is impersonal? It's because they think if he's unlimited, how can he have a personality? Because they think to have a personality and a form will limit him. Because if he's like this, he's not like that. Because something is infinite, it doesn't mean that things that are inconceivable to our mind are acceptable or allowable. If he wants to have a personality and a form, and if he wants to play the flute, who can stop him? So the impersonalists suffer from trying to measure the Supreme by their own intelligence, by their own capacity. So therefore they come up with an impersonal conclusion. So therefore, because they're trying to measure the infinite with the finite, they're trying to measure the absolute truth, the unlimited absolute truth with their own, their finite conceptual capacity, they are called abhudaya. The persons who are, what does abhudaya mean? Non-intelligent. And alpamedism? Little intelligence. So why they have little intelligence? Because they want something temporary. And they know they're going to lose it. If you work so hard and give your whole life to get something, you're going to lose. That's a little bit of intelligence. But to think that the absolute truth and contradict Krishna's own words, that this is what I am, I'm like this, aham savasya prabhavo, I am the source of everything, there's no truth superior to me, mata parataram na anyat, there's nothing other than me. So when they disagree with Krishna's words and say what he really means is something opposite to what he says, when there's no reason, they are called non-intelligent or very less intelligent. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul, but the ultimate word and the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead. Do you know that verse? You do. It's Medanti Tattva Vedas. That's right. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti Samhite. This is Medanti Tattva Vedas. Tattva means Jnana. This is the non-dual substance that nothing is different from. Modern personalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow their great predecessor, Sankaracharya, who specifically stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the Supreme Truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudev, or a prince or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 9.11, which we'll get to later, Krishna willing. Avajananti mam mudha manusham tanamashrita. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. The fact is, no one can understand Krishna without rendering devotional service and without developing Krishna consciousness. What do you think about that? No one can understand Krishna without rendering devotional service and without developing Krishna consciousness, without bhakti. One cannot understand. The Bhagavatam 10.14.29 in the prayers of Brahma confirms Atapite Devapadam Bhujadvaya Prasara Lesha Anugritta Evihi Janati Tattvam Bhagavan Mihimno Lachanya Eko Apicharam Vichinvan. My Lord, this is Brahma's words, if one is favored even by a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. In other words, if one uses one's own intellectual capacity, one's own ability to understand something that is so far beyond one's ability to understand, then one can never understand. Even if one tries very sincerely for many, 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 many years, still one can't understand. So, and also here's another verse from Brahma's prayers before that, the fourth verse in the 14th chapter. Shreya Sritim Bhaktim Udasyate Vibhu Krishyanti Te Kevalabho Dilabhite Labaye Te Samaso Kresh Shala E Vasishyate Nanyat Yato Stula Tasan Vagahi Vagatinam. My dear Lord, now listen carefully, because there's going to be, if one is performing devotional service but gives it up to gain the impersonal, then that act of doing that is compared to something here. So after I read it, I'm going to ask you what it is compared to. And then I will ask you what is the similarities between giving up devotional service to take to impersonal realization and the example. Now listen carefully. My dear Lord, Brahma says, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. Shreya Sritim. That path is Shreya. It's actually worthwhile, beneficial. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, someone gives up devotional service to speculate on the impersonal using the process of Gyan, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result, which is even defined the impersonal. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Okay, so what is giving up devotional service and taking to impersonal speculation as one's process, what is that compared to? Well, sometimes a rice. But beating empty husks. Now, what is the meaning of that example? See, because in Australia, no one ever sees full husks of wheat or rice. I guess the farmers do. But especially with rice, what do you do? I don't know how. Well, I guess you have to do the same thing with wheat too. But what do you have to do? The rice grows, and then you harvest it, and then what do you do?
Husk it.
And how do you do that?
Beat it.
Beat it and beat it. And that, what does the beating do?
That separates the husk from the grain.
Yeah, and then the next thing you do? Yes, you have, then you have to separate the husk from the grain. And how do you do that?
Something on?
With your fingers. I guess you could do it that way. It would take a little time, though.
Some kind of sifting process?
Well, it's called winnowing. And then they have this basket shaped like this. You've seen that, yeah? And they go like this. And there's wind, right? So you go like this, and the wind blows away. You have seen?
Yeah.
The wind blows away the husk, and what's left is the grain. And nowadays in India, so before they used to beat it. Now you know what they do? They put it on the road so you can drive over it with your car. So instead of saying hand like they do in the West, they say hand milled or something like that. And they say tire husk or something. No, they don't say, they don't tell their secrets, but we know. Have you ever seen this? Where? Huh? Yeah? And does she drive the car over too? No. I didn't think so. So, okay, now here's the example. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Okay, now who will explain that example?
Wait. The honey jar. And you're not tasting the honey.
But explain this example, but not with another example.
Mm-hmm. Like if you're just beating the husk, so it would just be wrecked out completely.
But beats an empty husk of wheat. But what we, but if there's no grain in it, if there's no wheat in it, so you're beating it and you're trying to separate the wheat from the husk, and then someone takes out the wheat, and then you're left with the empty husk. And to a person who doesn't know anything, it looks the same. Yes? But what, so if you beat the full husk, you get wheat out of it. But what do you get if you beat an empty husk? Nothing. But you only get, here it says, his only gain is trouble. The trouble of having to work so hard continuously and your hands ache. But that's all you get, your own pain and trouble. You don't get any wheat or rice. Huh? You waste your time and you get pain. So that's what Lord Brahma is comparing it to.
I was thinking that also, to speculate is through the intelligence.
Just yeah.
Like an empty husk, because Krishna's not there. You won't find him there unless he's manifest and appears within you.
Yeah.
So approach, just try and approach him through the mundane intelligence. It's like an empty husk. Like being an empty husk.
Nothing. Krishna's not there.
Nothing.
So here Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. By performing one amongst the many methods of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting, the jiva can attain success. This is stated in the Sringa Purana. The devotees easily attain the Lord by worship with devotion, using leaves, flowers, fruit, and water, which are easily available. Then why do you make an effort for liberation? Though this is so, those who reject bhakti and make efforts in jnana gain only suffering. This is the intention of this verse. That you can cross over the ocean of material existence by just hearing and chanting with leaves and fruits and a little water with bhakti. So why do that? Why give it up when it just takes the direct methodology? So he continues. Those who reject the path of auspiciousness, the stream of bhakti flowing like a river of honey, achieve only suffering. Shreya also refers to all the fruits of all other processes, as jnana and karma. Bhakti is the path which gives all those fruits as well. The jnana of those who reject bhakti gives only suffering. This is like taking a huge pile of empty husks and beating it. The result of the effort is pain in the hand and no rice in the hands. Okay, all those who want to give up the process of bhakti and take the impersonal speculation, raise your hand. No one wants to do it. It's just like beating empty husks. You don't get anything from it. So when you're in Kenya and someone wants to sell you empty husks, except if they're buckwheat husks, you can use them in a pillow, but you won't be able to get any buckwheat out of them. Don't buy them, okay, unless you have a specific plan for husks. Don't think you can beat them and get something out of it. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna or his form, qualities or names simply by mental speculation or by discussing Vedic literature. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, beginning by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, then only one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. Now, you could make the opposite. You could make a statement about the opposite of that. When one is not fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, so one is not engaged in Krishna consciousness, then one cannot achieve realization of Krishna. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's true, isn't it? If one is not engaged in Krishna consciousness, and if one is not fully engaged, or we could put it in the positive, saying to understand Krishna, one has to be fully engaged. Now, what does fully engaged mean in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada says here, beginning by chanting the Maha Mantra. What does fully engaged mean?
I think it means the outside and inside.
Yeah, good. Nice point. And what else does it mean? Yeah.
No separate interest.
Yeah. And continuously too. Non-devotee impersonalists think that Krishna has a body made of this material nature and that all his activities, his form and everything are Maya. These impersonalists are known as Mayavadis. They do not know the ultimate truth. Where is your consciousness? Well, where is your consciousness? On doing what you're doing for Krishna's pleasure? Yeah, if you do that, then it's fine. It's perfect. Well?
Then that's not devotional service.
No, it's not that it's not devotional service, but it's not this kind of full devotional service that Krishna Prabhupada is recommending here. So, but say if you love Krishna, if one loves Krishna, then automatically one thinks about Krishna inside and outside fully, continuously. What do you peek in for? trying to make an entrance. Drum roll. Okay. So, who are we talking about?
Inside
and outside, and with full love. When one has love for Krishna, then naturally one is always thinking about him inside and outside. So that's the ultimate standard, in other words. But also one can say, if one is really trying one's best, then Krishna sees it in a very positive light. There's a comment of the Srinath Chakravarti Thakur's in this regard. That Krishna sees, oh, my devotee is trying to think of me. So there's the aspect of our endeavor, and then there's the aspect of Krishna's mercy. So these statements is to bring our understanding of our part of the equation in the endeavor to a proper proper level of understanding. But ultimately we are dependent on Krishna's mercy.
So we're not pure love, that we are endeavouring, but we're not succeeding a lot of the time. We're failing, and we don't want to be failing, but we're just trying to have
it. So we're trying our best.
But, yeah.
Yes.
He does acknowledge that, he does see that you are wanting to be able to surrender your selfishness and your thing that takes you away from Krishna.
Don't worry too much about the thing that takes you away from Krishna. Worry about doing the thing that brings you closer to Krishna. What do you think about that? It's always a dangerous question to ask Jakey Tana. Well, what do you think about that, Jakey?
Well, that seems a very happy thing to do, you know,
If you think about all the negative things, you'll be miserable, and that won't help you think about Krishna. And if you think of what brings you closer to Krishna and try to fill up as much as possible your life with that, then you'll be happier. So Krishna continues on the same topic, saying, Naham prakasya savasya yoga maya samavrita mudoyam navijananti lokamam ajamavriyam. So I am never, the last thing he said about the abudaya, the unintelligent, but now he's going to say, for these type of people, Naham prakasya savasya, I am never manifest. Yoga maya samavrita. I remain always covered by my energy, by my potency, by my yoga maya, by my mahamaya. So that means that I'm there, but I'm not perceivable to them. I'm there, but I'm covered by this maya. Mudayam nabijanati. These mudhas, they cannot know me. What does mudha mean? Huh? Donkey, ass, fool. Prabhupada like to translate it often as rascal. Rascals cannot know me, and they cannot know that I am unborn and infallible. I've not assumed this personality in this nature, but rather I am unborn and perfect in it. It is not that there's a contamination in me of the mode of goodness. I always, when I read these type of verses, I remember this Ramayana that I once read that was translated by a Mayavadi. And that's what he said. He said that the modes of material nature are so powerful that even when God comes to this world, he's controlled by them. And therefore, Ramachandra acted as a kshatriya. Why are you laughing? Bit weak, or
I think it was like the most mature nature of God.
That means they can tell him, even the Supreme. But that's specifically what Mayavad philosophy is, that the Absolute is impersonal, and when the Absolute chooses to come to this world, he is placed under the mode of goodness, and therefore that impersonal Brahman is called Ishvara when he's contaminated by the mode of goodness. So therefore Prabhupada explained this in the last verse, that he says that they think that the Lord is impersonal and his devotional service is impure. It's not fully spiritual. So this is what Mayavad philosophy is. Did you ever hear anyone preach like this? Where?
Sunday feast.
At the Sunday feast? They asked questions, or they were preaching?
Giving their philosophy during, when you're going around talking to them.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Very popular.
Yeah, very.
In personalism, it's not like it's some little sect in South India. The whole New Age stuff is all impersonalistic and Buddhistic. Is that your experience when you're preaching?
Sometimes. It seems that even sometimes that can come out in devotees. They find that they've got it there from a past life.
Mm.
I think that's something like that experience for some friends.
Amongst the devotees?
Yeah, amongst the devotees.
Yeah, they have impersonal tendencies.
Yeah, it's like it's been kind of hiding deep within their heart.
Yeah.
It's come out. And it's really hard to get rid of.
Yeah. Jainism, they're both Buddhism and Jainism.
Because I was told by Jain that there are, or there is no God, and because if there's God, then who created him? That's the question that comes up, so they believe that there's no God.
And then who created him? I mean, the person who said that. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much.
All the best.
Drive
carefully.
Jainism and different branches, like some believe in idol worship, some don't believe in idol worship.
But they all agree on being impersonal. Yes? And some of them wear pants and some of them don't wear pants. But they all agree on being impersonalist. And they're all vegetarian. Do.
Believe in karma. Reduce as much karma as possible. That's why they're doing potatoes or something.
They're compassionate. But they don't exist. That's the funny thing in their philosophy. They don't exist. And yet they want to be compassionate.
Because like I was told by one Jain that you should stop. There's no need to stop burning guys, but you should stop potatoes and those things because they have contain more karma.
But who gets the karma? Who gets the karma?
Well, maybe the person consumes.
But the person isn't there if they're impersonalist. Who gets it? And well, they say, well, temporarily we have this. Temporarily we're a person. That's what they said about Krishna too.
Yeah, they said that you need to get out of this body. Like,
well, how did you get in it?
Yeah.
You were forced in?
I don't think they have an answer.
Okay, you were forced in, or did you choose to go in? What make believe? Anyone have want to play in person of this?
Leela.
It was Leela. To suffer. Is this your happiness and your pastime?
But it's just that's the illusion of the thickness of suffering.
So, like the animals, the suffering that the animals show, and the people shooting each other. That's how someone's getting pleasure. The all-knowing absolute truth has to get pleasure. By his pleasure pastime is to accept being shot in a war and bleeding to death in a muddy sewer or something. So this is how the absolute truth is going to chooses to get his pleasure. It's his leela. You expect me to believe that? And he has all intelligence too? He seems to be a little bit twisted to me. If that's how he gets pleasure, he could do something better. I mean, at least he could do something that's pleasurable in the material world. You think, well, why does he have to do that? It's his leela to be a pig or a potato.
Potatoes and animals don't have souls.
Well, for impersonalists, you mean, or are you talking about materialists? Well, we're talking about impersonalists now. Okay, but. Okay, but that's okay. We'll just finish with this one first, the impersonalists. No, but we're talking about impersonalists now. And Jains and things. Because to be compassionate and to not accrue karma. See, they have, the Buddhists also have something similar and peculiar, that they believe there's no existence of the person, but yet something is incarnating and reincarnating. So that's really a peculiar one.
But it's only because of your vision through your senses.
No, this is what they believe.
And happiness, it's not really. It's only your contaminated vision through your senses that you're seeing suffering and happiness. Actually, it's not there.
Did you ever get hit? Oh no, I don't want to ask you that question. There was no suffering, right? It's just due to your illusion.
Temporarily, where I misidentified.
But no, temporary doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's just there temporarily. So you temporarily, you mean it doesn't make any difference whether one situation temporarily.
If you understand your oneness with everything.
Well, do you understand your oneness with everything?
I'm striving for that.
Do you know anyone who does? I want to ask him for his money, first of all. That's what we always, all the money we want. Because you and I are the same.
It's a difficult thing to achieve, so you may not find very many people on it.
Well, okay, so you 50% realize you give 50% of their money. 50%
the
of their clothes, too.
I'm on the path. I'm not perfect. I'm striving to become one. But I'm on the path.
One.
To become one.
One with?
With everything.
That's that old joke, right? The yogi goes into the pizza place. Make me one with everything. But let's talk philosophy. Okay, you're struggling. Just because we want to make sure you're on the right path. So you're already the supreme, but you've forgotten. Is that what you're saying? Or you're everything, but have forgotten?
It's just a temporary state of illusion.
Then the one got temporarily covered by illusion. And the one includes everything. So there's no differentiation in the one?
The one is different, everything differentiated and one as well.
Well then how is it one? It's two, it's differentiated and one as well. So which one do you want to be, the differentiated or the one?
I want to give up my differentiation, my misidentification as being independent, and
okay.
Become one with everything.
Okay, so there's the illusion and the oneness. It's going to be hard for you to get out of this one, right? Well, now you're into duality already. The illusion is an illusion of illusion, or it's an illusion? Okay, so there's two. So somehow the absolute got covered by illusion. So how is he so absolute then? This is the argument.
He's not a he. Why do you keep using he?
Okay, he's she, just like contemporary books. He's she is covered by illusion.
If you're covered by illusion, you have to keep referring to he's and she.
Yeah, so what would you like to refer to it as?
The one.
Okay, so the one is covered by illusion. How are we doing now? But how did the one get covered by illusion? If you just think about it for a second, it doesn't really make any sense, because you have two, first of all. There's two things, and how could that supreme, that's everything, suddenly find himself with a second thing there, illusion, and not only that, he has to desire it first, right? For it to come, he has to desire it. So how could something that has no qualities and it's all one desire anything? Because as soon as you desire, there's two things. There's you and your desire. So then, not only that, you have you, your desire, and your illusion. You have three things already. So it starts multiplying from there. So it's not one.
They're all the same. They're all, like, spiritual. They're the same.
They're the same.
Yeah,
yes. But it doesn't make any sense. You have to admit it, though.
Well.
Yes.
If according to Bhagavad Gita,
yes,
if a person doesn't practice devotional service, he or she will never understand Krishna. So as much as we try to reason out with a Mayavadi or an impersonalist, we'll never ever be able to accept what you're saying, because...
No, there's two points. One is that they can understand Krishna without devotional service, but they can understand that their philosophy is inconsistent, incoherent, without understanding Krishna. And that can break their absolute faith in it, and therefore they might be able to hear something and chant and perform some devotional service.
So it's breakable. Or is it by a devotee actually planting a seed
there's a lot of people who say I'm an impersonalist and one and everything, but they're not so much deeply that. They're just, that's what everyone's saying, and that's what their friend told them, and they also say that, and they're quite innocent. But someone who's a diehard impersonalist, then they're going to... tough one to pull.
Yeah,
you have to be a Mahabhagavata.
Because I remember when we were at Murray Street Sunday feast, and one impersonalist was having a big argument with Radharaman. And you could see, no matter how much you try to say, they just can't see. It seems to be that.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Seems to be at that point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But through a devotee's mercy,
sometimes someone who's very pure can. Mahabhagavata can pull them out, but Mayavad philosophy is condemned, and it's we're not supposed to play with it because it's a dangerous poison. And Doug Tuney and I saw in the Philippines, there was this one fellow who was one of those vague, proud impersonalists who knew everything and nothing simultaneously, but wanted to explain it to everyone. So we were in the Philippines in this big hotel room full of 500 people or so. And Prabhupada was lecturing, then he asked for questions, and the impersonalist fellow stood up. And he said something that no one could understand, really. It was just a bunch of words. Mm-hmm. And then he spoke for quite a while, and Prabhupada said, "Are you finished?" And he said, "No." And he kept on talking and talking and talking. And everyone was starting to get impatient, because he just, when you give some people the microphone, you can't get it out of their hands. So after a while, Prabhupada said again, "Are you finished yet?" And he said, "No." So he kept on talking and talking and talking, explaining and making his points. And then finally, after I don't know how long it really was,
but
wait a second. And everyone was getting very impatient. So then finally, Prabhupada said, are you finished yet? He said, yes. Now I'm finished. And then Prabhupada just said, now sit down! And everyone cheered. Because everyone could hear Prabhupada. He exposed himself as just a microphone lover and loving to hear the sound of his own voice and just wanting to talk and say things that didn't make any sense and proud, etc. And Prabhupada allowed him to expose himself. He was very expert. Very expert. Because if he would have said, if he would have argued with him, everyone would have first of all sympathized with him a bit, and it would have caused, you know, some people would have been like this, some people would have thought that, and he would have argued back. He was that kind of a person. He had the microphone. And so Prabhupada let everyone, get the whole audience on his side, and then just told them to sit down. But sometimes Prabhupada would just be very heavy with the people too. He didn't like this Mayavada philosophy. If some of your teachers speak Mayavada philosophy to you, what will you do? Will you tell them to sit down and take the microphone out of their hands and like chant in your mind or something? Sometimes when people would say, or the devotees would present to Prabhupada that, you know, this Mayavadi said this and that's, and then and Prabhupada, or we're all God or something, and Prabhupada would sometimes say, we will kick on their face with boots. They say they're God. We'll kick on their face with boots. And then another time there was this popular impersonalist yogi who used to say he was God. And Balkrishna Yogeshwar was his name, and now he's, I don't know where he is. In Hong Kong, Prabhupada, there was a reporters at a press conference were asking Prabhupada about him. And Prabhupada first said that don't ask about others, you know, we're here. Krishna consciousness, presenting Krishna consciousness, you can ask about that. And then the reporter still asked Prabhupada about it, and Prabhupada again declined. And then the third time Prabhupada asked about this about Krishna Yogeshwar, Prabhupada said he's a dog and a cheater. And the reporter was so happy because for a good story you need some controversy and tension and things like that. One spiritual leader was calling another one a dog and a cheater. So he said, but Krishna is the best cheater, the biggest cheater. And he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita of gambling, I am the cheat, he's the potency that gives the cheating potency. And he said, he will get cheated by Krishna. Then within a few months after that, he had a mother, everyone has a mother, and his mother used to say that he was God, he was Krishna. And he had an elder brother, and you'll never guess who she used to say the elder brother was. Balaram. So, and he was preaching in the West, and he had a large following and lots of money. And he also happened to have a beautiful Western secretary who he happened to marry. And his mother didn't like it. You know how mothers are. You know, that's very, they want to choose who you're going to marry in India. So she rejected him. And she said, he's no longer God. The other one is God, the older brother is God. But it didn't, no one. And then later, one other time, he was, they had a big festival or something like that. And he was there at the festival, and someone took a pie, a cream pie, and put it in his face. And then also he had a toothache and he had to go to the hospital, and Prabhupada Because and then the next day, after the press conference in Hong Kong, some local Indian people came to Prabhupada to say, why did you criticize? Because it became a newspaper article, you know, sadhus don't criticize, that kind of a thing. So Prabhupada convinced them that the man was basically a cheater. And he said, he's such a rascal. He doesn't think that I have to go to the hospital for a toothache. How can I be God? And then the local Hong Kong paper made a newspaper article out of it, and the reporters were there, and they were so happy, you know. And then the New York Time magazine picked it up, and there was a story in Time magazine, and the International Time magazine, that I think they called it like Disagreement or Trouble in Paradise, where the two, you know, the two gurus are criticizing each other or something. And Prabhupada was so happy. Strong. Okay. So now you're finished with all your exams?
No. Still last time.
Oh. Were you in anxiety about it? Did you study? Did you study?
Yeah, I studied for exam on Thursday.
For the Thursday one. For
more worried about that.
What is it? What is that exam? I'll give you an exam secret, a tip that will help you. But if you remember the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, then something difficult becomes easy. And if you don't, something easy can become difficult. That's my exam tip for you. You heard it carefully? So that means you won't be able to come to the next 2 days' classes because you have to study all day long and all night long. Okay.
That secret will help us when we have our ultimate exam as well.
Yeah. Practice makes perfect for the ultimate exam. Practice in life what you want your consciousness to be at death. And today is the passing away day of Haridas Thakur, isn't it?
Yesterday.
It was yesterday. Oh, yeah. And so we got to speak a little Prabhupada Gita. Prabhupada took sannyas to preach in Mathura, this day called Vishrup Mahotsav.
I was watching Abhijan and today that part for your second time.
The fog that happened to be the one you were watching? And today is also the day of Vishrup Mahotsav, which was when Mahaprabhu was in Pandharpur. And there, in Pandharpur, in the temple of, who knows the name of the deity, Pandharpur, Maharashtra. Vitaleswar. So he was there and he found out that Vishwarup had left this world, his older brother who had taken sannyas. He found out that he had left this world. So even though it was Chaturvasya at that time, he shaved his head and there was a big feast. On this day. So even the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who follow Chaturmasya very, and the Gaudiya Math, they follow it very more strictly. They don't shave for the 4 months, but on this day they shave. have a feast, and they don't follow their restrictions, because Mahaprabhu did that. And there's a wonderful picture that was taken on that day of Prabhupada. In the case of Maharaj, his Guru Maharaj, his divine grace, Prabhupada, case of Maharaj, sitting in a chair, and Prabhupada in one very, very old Guru Maharaj. It was like 85 or 90 something. He was very, very old. He also took sannyas with Prabhupada on that day, on this day, so many years ago. 1959, maybe? Yeah? 59. So 59, how many years ago was that? 1959, how many years ago?
1959. So many years ago.
So if you answer like that, you're going to fail your test. We want, you know, more exact answers than that. 1959. No one take out your calculators, your mobile phones, or your computers to figure it out. Huh? What year is it now? Huh? Okay. All right. How many? We need an accounting major, not a management major. 11 plus? 11 plus 41. 11 plus 41 is? Okay. Okay, you have to, you have to be careful when you're counting chains when you're just giving books. Oh, boy. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, your lotus feet, your lotus feet, your lotus feet, your lotus feet, all the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, all the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
My goodness.
Okay. Did you want to say anything else, Tony, about this day?
Not particular, but nothing comes immediately to mind.
The Prabhupada, when he was asked, he was asked to speak after taking sannyas, and usually that's not the case, but they asked Prabhupada to speak. So the case of Maharaj asked Prabhupada to speak, and Prabhupada spoke in English, even though really no one could really speak English, but it was his mission to speak in English, preach in English.